Welcome to 90 Day Fiancé WTF Podcast, a weekly hangout to talk about what the fuck we all just watch on TLC's 90 Day Fiancé. I am Nadia, and with me is my co-host, Lon.
Hey, everybody. What's up, Nadia?
Or if I'm with the girls, he'll be Lana.
Mm-hmm.
Get it?
No.
You know, like Jovi became Jovina because he's with the
girls. Oh, yeah. That was an interesting scene.
Which part? The drinks with the girls?
Yeah, or... the drinks with the girls. Especially, I think, when Jovi was left alone. That part was, for me at least.
You think that he was being interrogated?
Okay, let me get to it. So when he was telling them how influential they were, and then he just flat out said, you got fake boobs. I was like, yo, and just calling him out.
Shots fired.
Yeah, I was like, okay, Jovi, that's not really, maybe that's how he talks to women. I don't know. He just started calling him out like that. And they actually took it pretty well. I mean, they didn't seem to be offended or anything. And he was just like, you have fake boobs. And now she wants fake boobs. Like, yo, man, this guy has no chill.
So what do you think about that scene in particular? Would you side with Jovi, or do you think that the friends are right when they say that he's being overly protective?
It's in the middle, right? Jovi is somewhat protective sometimes, or not protective, controlling sometimes.
Mm.
And I can see how this is an opportunity for them to call him out on that.
Mm.
Is this the right opportunity? I don't think so, because I think he's making a really good point. We talked about it last week, how he does make what we would consider a fair trade here. We'll go, and I'm down to go with you. But wait for me so I can go with you. You know, shit's dangerous.
Yeah.
But for me, what opened my eyes a little bit, and this was also true, was she wants to help. And we don't know what the situation is going to be like in 3 weeks. It might even be too late. And then there goes our opportunity to try to help them. So, you know, after that was kind of verbalized, I was like, okay, I could kind of see that. This is her home. These are her friends, people she cares about. And someone to say, wait, just give us 3 weeks. And for her to think, we might not have that.
Yeah.
We might not. I was looking at TV going, okay, I get it. If that was in my position too, and someone was telling me to wait, you know, I didn't consider that. But now that I know, I would probably consider that if I were in her shoes. I'd be like, look, we might not have that. And that's urgency, right? To me, that was an eye-opening insight that I should have considered and I hadn't considered up until this episode.
Yeah, that's a really fresh perspective there. I never thought of it that way. I think I was more leaning towards Jovi because she planned to bring Myla, and I kind of put myself in his shoes and be like, well, you know,
yeah,
I have to look out for my family.
For
yeah, it's like, okay, I know you're going to Prague, but you know, Myla being very young and I'm not coming with you, I can definitely feel his anxiety because I think I would be the same. But I can also see your point of view, Lon, where yes, there is urgency because maybe they don't have 3 weeks. Maybe her friends need some sort of humanitarian help during those times. And maybe she could be helping them safely from Prague. But again, like, there are a lot of unknowns, so I can see why Jovi's also very skeptical.
Definitely.
Yeah, and it sometimes Yara sounds very impulsive because she's very insistent, right? She's like, I want to go back to Europe. As soon as I get my green card, going back to Europe, I don't care. No one's going to stop me. And if she can hear herself or see herself in the mirror, she could understand why Jovi's like, whoa, girl, like, chill. You know, you have a kid now.
Yeah, I still think he's right. And let's not get things twisted. I still think he's right, listeners. I still think he's right. You said it. It is an impulsive decision. She is acting off emotion. If we're to think logically here, you know, and you're going to take the kid and you're going full speed ahead, you know, he makes a lot of sense by saying, let's plan this out. Let me come with you and things like that. While I understand the urgency, I still do think he's in the right here to just, let's plan this out. Let's get a plan going. We can't just fly blind going to some kind of war zone or whatever. And, you know, like you said, granted, they'll be in Prague and stuff like that, but how do we plan to help them? You know, so it still needs some careful consideration and some thought.
Totally. And I was also wondering, now that we're talking out loud about this, why can't he take off from work?
Yeah.
Why does he have to go back to work if his wife is in distress and wants to go back to Europe? Can he postpone it? Can he maybe swap out with another colleague for another month schedule or something? Like, it just feels like he's not willing to compromise in that particular department, and maybe it's a restriction at work. I don't know. But other than that, I just want to commend Jovi for holding his own while talking to her friends, because clearly they were like trying to get to him about being overly protective and being very controlling. But I think when he said like, hey, I understand that you guys have influence over her, so I would like your support to let her know that, you know, maybe she's making a rash decision. And I thought that was really stand up of him to do that, you know?
It was very mature.
Very
and
mature.
It's also one of those things where you really have to go out, and I would call it kind of like sticking your neck out. Because for me, it's like, if I knew that they didn't see me in the best light, they're talking shit behind my back, you know, while they're with my girlfriend and stuff like that. For him to just be like, look, she listens to y'all. You know what I mean? Like, can you just put in a word, put in a good word for me? Like he did. He takes a certain level of maturity rather than just be like, well, let's just sit here awkwardly and I'll make fun of your boobs. You know, he really did. Like, she listens to y'all. I know you guys care about her. Can you just kind of... But I think they answered normally. They still had her back, right?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like, oh, yes, we'll totally do that. But they were just like, you know, and then they took that as an opportunity to be like, you do, what did she say? A tad bit? Is that what she said? You're a tad bit controlling.
Controlling, yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Anyway, shall we move on to the family Libby?
I mean, what else is there to say? Because this is their show. Like, you know what I mean? This isn't Libby and Andre anymore. And it makes me wonder what the rest of the season is going to be for Libby and Andre, because this is totally turning into their, at least Libby and Andre's scenes. It's just the Charlie show or Libby's family show at this point. But all we get are scenes with the sisters, scenes with the mom, scenes with Charlie. I didn't really care much for it. I know it was going to be Charlie justifying himself, trying to win over his family. Sisters try to call him out, and he's like, whatever. And it's Andre's the common denominator here. And it's just like, we're so far off from like Libby and Andre at the moment. Just give them their show on Discovery Plus. Stop wasting our time.
Yeah.
If I wanted to watch this, you know what I mean? I don't know. So I sat through it. I didn't fast forward through it, but the entire time I'm like, this isn't about Libby and Andre anymore.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I'm with you there. 100%, right? Everything you said. The highlight here is about her family conflict and not really about their relationship anymore. It's more about Becky, Jen, Charlie, the mom now, right? I mean, Chuck is probably also in the sidelines just waiting to come in. Yeah, it's less about Andre and Libby nowadays. That's not why we watch this show. It's mostly to focus on people's relationship. I just found it funny how towards the end of the dinner discussion, everyone sort of agreed that the problem was Andre.
Yeah. And I could see it moving in that direction too. Yeah. And maybe they are. Maybe they're setting it up like, what's her face? Pedro and what's her face? Maybe they
Chantel.
Are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chantel, like the family Chantel. Maybe they are. And if they are, then you called it like, what, a season or two ago? That the family is setting themselves up for the fucking spinoff. And it's like,
And it's perfect timing too, because there's not going to be any more family Chantel, right? Because there's no more Pedro. Maybe Chantel will be in the single life. Who knows? But yeah, I don't think they deserve their own show anymore. So I can definitely see Andre and Libby taking over that slot from Chantel and her family.
Yeah.
Maybe they will get what they wish for. So let's move on to Usman and Kimberly. Oh, man. Dude, I read someone called her a sex beggar, and I'm like, that's very appropriate. I also feel like Kim really doesn't know what she wants because they keep circling back to this same topic of first wife,
Exactly.
second wife, what you can't do, what I want to do, what I want you to do. Like, Kim, we get it. You look like a woman who wants attention and love from someone. We get it. All of us wants that. Usman is the last guy on earth for you to get that from. He's a famous guy in Nigeria. He can have any women he wants.
They said it on this episode too.
Exactly. And you want something else. You think you want him because of his celebritydom or whatever, his fame. But really, what you want is a man who would cater to you 24/7 or whatever that is that you need from your partner. And it's not Usman.
A one woman man at that.
A monogamous
Yes.
relationship, for
Yes.
sure. Let's start there.
Yes. It's a cycle now. Every episode is about, I'm down for this, but I'm not down for that. And then, okay, wait, okay, well, okay, I'm just mad and I'm okay. I'm gonna work this out. No, I don't like this. I'm just like, dude, like, you are not down for this. Like, you're not,
Don't
period.
convince yourself otherwise, because this is not for you, Kim.
It's the same fucking argument we've had the last two episodes already. Like, you're not, you ain't built for this. Admit it.
You
Cut
ain't
your
built for
losses
sister
now.
wiving.
No, you're not built for sister wife.
And it got to a point where, I hate to say this, but it became pathetic to the point where she was surprised a female turned up to his birthday party. And I'm like, it's a birthday party for a celebrity. Who do you think will turn up? It's an what, all male fraternity?
I made the same fucking note. Like,
And Kim thought this woman's gonna marry him?
this
Like,
is gonna be like
look.
this all dudes party. Like, he's got other friends. Like, now he can't have women. Like,
Turn up just to celebrate a birthday? Like, see, like, I wish Kim could
I
see
gotta talk to you. I gotta talk to
it.
you. No, you don't. Whatever you have to say can be said amongst friends. Like, this is a friend. Like, oh my gosh.
I feel secondhand embarrassment for Kim because that's how low she has gotten to the point where she has to ask someone, like, oh, I didn't know she's going to turn up for his birthday party. Like, bitch, it's a birthday party. Everyone's going to show up. Male, female, whatever will show up. And not every female that show up is going to marry him.
She's super, super insecure.
It's
Super
starting to
insecure.
show a lot more this season. But hey, nobody wants you to air out your sweaty boobs in the car, so
That
that was disgusting. Just want to say that out loud. All right. I want to say before I move on to our last couple here, I feel like TLC needs to put up some trigger warning because there were a lot of triggering incidents and events during this last episode, including she who shall not be named, but we all know who. I just feel like there's a lot of trigger moments for
I
me.
fast-forwarded through her scene, so I'm not exactly sure.
I had to live through it because I couldn't fast forward. Damn you, Sling. But
I know in the previews she was like tearing up the car or something like
she,
that.
yeah, she tore the car because she thinks that it's hers because she paid for it. And if we didn't hear his side of the story, you would think that she's right. She has the right to do that. But then when you hear his side of the story, you're like, okay, she's mental.
Let's talk about it. Now I want to know. Now I want to know. I know. I
Okay.
know, folks,
Just
we
this
said we
one
wouldn't talk
time.
about Angela,
Just
but
this one time,
I'm
y'all.
interested. You got me.
Okay.
You baited me. I want to hear
I
it.
hate to do this. I hate to do this, but let's take a detour for a second, right? To talk about she who shall not be named. But I will say, Michael.
We're more talking about his side, if
His side
anything.
of the
If
story.
anything,
Okay.
if
If anything.
anything.
Okay. So his side of the story is that he's asking for money to take down his Instagram account because he don't have any, because she asked him to not work while this visa process is ongoing. So he needs the income, and she stopped giving him the income that she has been providing him. So he went back to Instagram to, I guess, be earning, like,
influencer money or
influencer money,
whatever.
because
Right,
he's
right,
now
right.
known, right, on TV.
Right.
So this is probably the easiest thing he could do. He just go on social media, do TikToks, you know, promote something on Instagram, whatever, right? And she wants him to take the Instagram down. And he's like, I have no money. I need supplemental money. Like, you're not giving me money. What am I supposed to do? You told me not to work.
She wants him to be
She just wants to control
dependent
him,
on him.
dependent on
Yeah,
her. Yeah.
the codependent, or not codependency, but dependency issue. She
Yeah.
wants that. She wants to hold that money over his head.
Yeah. And she wants to hold the visa over his head too, because now
Wow.
he's like all in, right? He's
That's not
they're
right.
married. Exactly. It's very abusive.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. And then when they played like some scenes from past season, I'm like, okay, she doesn't let him hang out with the goofballs, his own friends. Okay, who the fuck is he gonna hang out with?
Yeah.
She doesn't allow him to meet up with American expats to learn about the US, right? Remember that scene?
Yep.
Basically, she's controlling every aspect of his life. How is
Wow.
that fair? And she berates him. She verbally abused him. And now she vandalizes his home and car that she claims she paid for.
Disgusting.
Exactly. And I just feel like TLC has to stop this. Like, at
Yeah.
some point, they have to either put a disclaimer or some sort of trigger warning, because this should not be on TV. People who have gone through this for real in life would be very triggered.
Right.
You know?
And I get he's the victim here, right? I'm not victim blaming.
Mm-hmm.
But the counter argument, right? Let's address it. The
Yeah.
counter argument is, well, he doesn't have to put up with that, right? If he wanted to, he could end this. He could end this today if he wanted to.
Yeah.
Like, could he just say, okay, we're done, and then use whatever fame he has left to get his Instagram back? Or is there some kind of contractual shit going on with TLC that he has to stay and fucking this toxic ass relationship?
I think
Just
what
feel
we're
bad for the
seeing,
guy.
yeah, what we're seeing in the next episode is he said he's done. And that's the first time in a long time, or at least the first time we've seen Michael lose his shit.
Wow.
Yeah. So
I'm gonna have
he has
to.
been hanging on because, like I said, he's all in with her. He talks really favorably of her. He tells his friends, I miss her.
Oh,
I
yeah.
haven't seen her for 2 years, but we're in constant communication. But when we do communicate, we fight a lot because she's obviously berating him, controlling him.
Because she's a fucking terrible person,
Right.
period.
Like, check out this hypocrisy, right? She doesn't let him have Instagram because she thinks that he's using that to flirt with other women. Okay. Yeah. Okay. We can give her that. But how is it that she can get away with flirting with other men on TikTok and dancing with them? And you know
All
what I
the
mean?
time.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
there was that scandal with the plastic surgeon too in Beverly Hills. Like, come on. There's a double standard here. And she's getting away with it because TLC is letting her get away with it. We, as the viewers, are part of the problem too. We let her get away with it. You know, no one is exactly starting a petition to ask for her to be removed from TV. But that's why I said the least TLC can do is to put up a trigger warning or something, or at least, like, towards the end of the episode, say something about, like, if you've been in a domestic abusive relationship, call this hotline. You know,
Right.
like,
Call her out on her shit. Right, right, right.
I don't know. The quality of content on 90 Day Fiancé is really deteriorating at this moment. But anyway, I digress. We can go back to our
All
usual
right.
programming and end this with Bilal and Shaida, which is also triggering for me, because how is it that this doctor says it's riskier the longer you wait? And Bilal's reply to that is, oh, so you mean we shouldn't try for the next couple of years?
Yeah.
Bitch, what are you
Bitch.
hearing?
He's so fucking manipulative.
He's so gaslighting. Like,
Yes.
oh my
So
God.
what I'm hearing you say is that we should wait another. He didn't fucking
He didn't
say
say that.
that.
He said the opposite. I mean,
Oh
he
my
implied the
gosh.
opposite. He said if you wait longer, it's riskier.
Yeah.
And we all know that. That's why he started off by saying you're in the advanced maternal age.
Right.
Or as some doctors would call it, like, you would be a geriatric pregnant woman or something like that.
Right.
And his reply was, oh, I guess we gotta wait for a couple of years.
Yeah. And he said the doctor said it. So what you're saying is, no, not at all.
No.
Yeah. Again, every opportunity this guy has to embarrass his wife, he takes it. And she fired back, right? But did you catch when he tried to embarrass her and he said, so you're saying we should try first, right? And then she's like, well, we haven't tried. You know what I mean? We haven't tried. It's zero because you're fucking not interested in trying. You know what I mean? And I'm just like, he tried to embarrass her. He was trying
That was a jab for sure. But can I say that I think too, this is, okay, maybe I'm triggered by Shaida as well. This is the same tactic that Shaida had to resort to in order to talk directly to Bilal. Just like how she opens up about their relationship during the tell-all.
Oh, definitely.
Like during the tell-all, she was all, you know, she has this bravado and she's all like gutsy and suddenly she's spilling everything.
She finds her power when others are around.
With a mediator, like when there's a third person and, you know, preferably an expert or, you know, like in this case, the gynae. It's like, I think her goal of that visit is, can you let my husband know that we should start right now?
And totally, 100% agree.
Yeah. And Bilal's like, oh, but we have to try first. And then I'm not sure, Lon, if you watch Pillow Talk, but Kara and Guillermo was like, whoa, what do you mean that they're not trying? And there are two interpretations, apparently. Some couples thought that they're not doing the nasty, and Kara thought that they are doing it, but he's just not finishing it inside her.
Yeah.
So it's like, either way, I guess they're not actively
trying. He's using contraception.
Yeah. And Kara even said, if I were her, I would start poking holes in my condoms. Like, seriously, get it on right now. Because he's not listening to the doctor, clearly.
Yeah.
So I guess if I'm in Shaida's shoes, I would have to take drastic measures.
Yeah. And she's being naive, right? One of the notes I made was when she was on the phone call with one of her friends. She said, oh, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt that he wants kids. He does not want kids.
Right in front of her.
He does not want kids. You're keeping this hope alive, right? The fact that you had to put it in a prenup already says enough. This guy does not want kids. He says he does sometime down the line, but I think, look, he's a smart guy. All right. I don't like him, but he's smart. What I think is going on is if he can stall this long enough, you know, and say, oh, well, it's too late now. You know what I mean? She had to put it in the prenup that they needed this to happen by 40. But like, you know, he's definitely stalling here.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want kids. Like, ideally, he doesn't want kids further down the line either. It doesn't matter how long this break is. Newly married. He tried to emphasize that to the doctor. Yeah, we just got married. And then she's like, we've been married a few months and stuff. And this is not a guy who wants kids.
Yeah. Period. Because,
yeah, they would have at least, like the doctor said, tried, right?
And
he ain't trying. Nah.
Yeah. He's not enthusiastic about it. And she, right. She wants to check the viability of her eggs. And he's not even down for that. He's like, no. We should be enjoying each other. And yeah, you're right, Lon. I also think that he's buying time for sure. Probably will get a vasectomy down the road. No.
Good point about the viability is that we also should note is the 21-day cycle, I guess, eye raiser.
Yeah, does affect her chances because it shortens the time when you need to get your eggs.
The fertilization.
The ovulation cycle is just very short. So she has a very narrow window every month.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to like be more strategic and target like, okay, this week, let's do it, you know?
Yeah.
So I just feel like he's just not enthusiastic at the end of the day. You know, we can talk about this every week, but we can see, like Stevie Wonder can see. He's not, he's not enthusiastic.
Yeah.
All right, Lon. So that is our coverage of last week's episode of 90 Day Fiancé, Happily Ever After. What is your WTF moment?
For me, it was Kimbali, again, dictating how the second wife situation should happen and should occur and placing rules on this. And he's like, No, bitch. This is, what are you talking about? After faking to him that she was down. Well, okay, I kind of get that, you know. If I didn't like your son, if you didn't like my son, you know, blah, 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 blah. I get it. All right. So, you know, what if I meet someone in America? No. Oh, hell nah. You can't. Well, okay. But if she's Hapa or what is it? Hausa? Hapa? Whatever.
Hausa.
If she's Hausa but she's in America, what? That doesn't rule anything out. Yeah. I fucking told you. I'm like, here we fucking go. You are not down for this. You are not built for this. Like, don't be telling him you respect his culture, you respect his wishes, but then start placing conditions on this shit. This isn't how it works. Yep. So fucking WTF to that.
Yep. My WTF is obviously Bilal.
Bilal, right.
And his misinterpretation of what the doctor said. That's so triggering.
Yeah.
But also, I think, like what we just discussed a few minutes ago, what somebody who shall not be named, what she did to Michael's car was also very triggering. She's so vile. Like, she got into the taxi or the Uber. She was, like, holding a glass of, I'm assuming, alcohol and smoking. And I'm like, dude, like, have some respect for that guy's car.
Yeah.
You're entering someone's car with your cigarette and...
And a drink.
What if you spill it? What if your cigarette ashes all over his back seat? Like...
The self-entitlement.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. That was really triggering. Gotta do better, TLC. Gotta do better.
I 100% agree.
All right. We shall take a break and we'll be right back in a few. And we're back to talk about happier stuff. Or maybe not so happy stuff.
Not so happy, maybe. Depends how you see it.
Yeah, depends on how you see it. Definitely happier than 90 Day Fiancé Happily Ever After. So this is episode 7 of Hot D, House of the Dragons. Lon, let's get your take on it.
Main takeaways. I lost an eye, but I gained a dragon.
Boom.
The lines that were drawn between Rhaenyra and Alicent, with the loyalties Viserys being in a tough spot.
Mm-hmm.
Some, you know, familial incestuousness going on there. What they didn't finish. They finished the unfinished business. Daemon and Rhaenyra. Yeah. And then finally, plot twist. That was a crazy plot twist. And if I'm interpreting this right, that Laenor was in on it the entire time from the beginning, that he knew that he was faking his death. That he knew that this was going to be a fake death and that he was not going to be murdered, which I didn't catch until like the very last before end credits scene, is he shaved off his locks and he's in the boat. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what? It just I thought he was for sure dead. And then I was like, wait, all they did was burn the body. And that explains why Daemon ran in there and snapped that guy's neck.
Yeah.
And all he did was, you know, what do you want from me, my lord? And he said, a clean death with many witnesses or whatever, you know what I mean? And I was just like, it makes sense. It's a crazy episode, y'all. This is good TV here. Anyway, so those were my main takeaways, if I were to summarize key points.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. My main takeaways is that definitely the line has been drawn between Team Green and Team Black.
Right.
Yes, there were incestuous moments. Did you catch the part where Aegon and Aemon were talking about how they were going to be betrothed to their own sister?
Yeah, and Aemon, so here's another note I made. Aemon seems more like the, not maybe leader is the wrong word, but more up to the duties of being, I guess.
Living up to his name.
The politics side of it. He's like, you know what? That's our fucking duty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. And what are you talking about? You know, and I'm like, this isn't what's going on in Aegon's head at all.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, and I don't fucking know her. She's weird, you know? And he's like, I would totally marry her for duty.
For duty. Yeah. And I really like the confrontation between Rhaenyra and Alicent. You can tell Alicent really wants an eye for an eye. Literally.
That was my jaw dropped. I get it. Your son was hurt. But then to ask that, to ask that somebody really hurt a child.
Yeah.
And then to go for it, like, oh my gosh. I get it. Your son's hurt and I would fucking want revenge too. But really to just say, you know what? Look at a kid and go, give me that fucker's eye, yeah, man.
Like, I think, damn, this is where we see that Allison is so far from who she was in the beginning. Like, yeah, she's finally understanding that she has a lot of power, is not shy to exercise that. And she knows that her husband is weak, like figuratively and physically weak, and that she can get away with it. I mean, she has Kristen Cole by her side. Now she has her dad, who's the hand of the king now. And she has Larry Strong. So she knows that she has allies and she's going to tempt her fate. And we're going to see that, right? Because next week's episode, we're going to see that Team Green, the Hightowers, are taking over King's Landing. And the other takeaway for me is, again, going back to Aemon, I like how he mustered all his courage to claim Vhagar. I didn't like the fact that he kind of stole it from his cousins, right?
Right.
Because I guess she wanted, I forgot her name and I apologize.
She doesn't have a dragon.
She doesn't have a dragon yet. And she thought she's going to inherit her mom. But then he's like, nope, I'm taking this. Like, I guess it's like finders keeper, right? Like,
whoever should have claimed her. Yeah, right. Like, that was it.
Yeah. But it took a lot of balls for him to claim him. And, you know, I was watching a couple of YouTubes that describe like Vhagar being now the oldest dragon after Balon. And it's a female dragon. She's obviously big and she's like she's like Churros, my cat. They're like older, they're fiercer.
Isn't she supposed to be the biggest of them all, right?
Yeah, she is. So the fact that he did that and managed to claim her, that's a win, a big win for Team Green. And huge. I think Otto Hightower recognized that. It's a huge win.
Yeah, he did too, right? I lost an eye. It was a fair trade. Yeah, yeah, when they couldn't get it, he was like, it's a fair trade. I was like, yeah, damn. Yeah.
And then I think we also will see how he sort of take over the leadership from his brother. Because according to the books, the brother is not really keen on being the next in line. He's a big drinker and he just wants to fuck around. And
while you were drowning yourself in your cups, right?
Yeah.
How Allison put it or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
And we're going to see another conflict too. I think Corlys Velaryon, it's his turn to fall sick. And his wife and Corlys' brother, they might fight for the Driftmark throne. The claim to Driftmark, I guess. So that's the conflict. And I think the Triarchy has started another war in the Stepstones. Yeah,
right.
The same war that during the council 2 weeks ago, where Rhaenyra was like, well, we got to do something about it. And Viserys like, nah. And Allison was like, yeah, we're good. We're chill. And Rhaenyra was like, well, if you don't do something about it, it's going to turn into something. So it is going to turn into something. And I guess maybe they'll get the Dragon Riders to fight the war for them. Yeah, I think there were a lot of really great scenes on this episode. I feel like, you know, we finally see Rhaenyra being very strategic, and that's why she asked her uncle for help.
Right. I think the fight was a crazy scene to watch the kids go at it. Like, okay. Yeah, and that one of them gets jumped by like, what, 4 or 5 of them. He's about to beat the guy's head in with a rock.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then the knife comes out and I was just like, dude, that was so intense. And then you see the gash and I was like, fuck, man.
Yeah.
That was a crazy scene. I wonder who somebody was directing that. Like, all right, like, here's what's going to happen. You're going to kick his ass.
Yeah.
It was off the rails, that scene. They're supposed to be kids too.
Yeah, yeah. It's sad that the parents' beef kind of trickled down to them. It really poisoned the way they look at each other, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, because Allison's whispering to her sons saying that, hey, your cousins are actually bastards.
That had its own tension too. When Viserys was like, who said that shit? And he's like,
yeah,
looking at Allison and Allison's looking back. But then the answer, everybody knows. I was like, oh, man, everybody knows. And Aegon just left it at that. That was it.
We all can see.
Yeah.
Everyone knows. Everyone can see. Yeah, but I got to give it to Viserys, right? Like, even though he's weak, he's trying to, like, right the wrong here. And He's trying to put the kibosh on it. So, you know, with whatever strength that and authority he has or he thinks he has. Yeah, I just think that the real villain here is definitely the Hightowers. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe next episode I might be Team Green. Who knows? But definitely, definitely not a fan of Kristen Cole.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I'm over Kristen. Kristen Cole.
I'm over. I think a lot of people are over Kristen too. I'm also over the fact that HBO was playing around with the lighting too much. Like the night scenes was really bad. I don't know if that affected your TV, Lon, but I was watching the scene where Rhaenyra and Daemon were walking down the beach and it was like dimmed and then it was bright and then it was dim and then brighter and then that part kind of ruined it for me. It's like, remember the long night that wore and then it was too dark?
Yeah.
It's like, now I realize that when I want to watch Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon episode, it has to be at night with the shutters down and everything all dimmed out. Because then I can see the contrast on TV because otherwise I won't be able to make out what the fuck I'm looking at.
You need to adjust your black levels. So, and you know, I've seen arguments online and stuff. Well, if somebody, you just need a better TV. You're right. The lighting conditions in the room play a big part. I think if you have lights on, and especially for a TV that glares, that's not a good look. Turn off all the lights, watch the episode at night. For me, it was still kind of difficult, but my black levels are tuned, right? So, but Koi has bad eyes. So for Koi, she couldn't see anything. All she saw was the white hair. She's like, I know people are out there, but I don't know who that is.
Oh, like, that's bad. Yeah.
But I was able to see it. Could it have been better? Totally. Yeah, there could have been better lighting conditions. Maybe they could have faked some moonlight and turned up, I don't know, the brightness levels in post-production.
Yeah.
That's what I think they should have done.
Yeah.
Improved it in post-production.
Shoot it in night mode.
In night mode. Bam! Everything's green. Like.
All right. Any other takeaways or highlights for you, Lon, before we close
out? You know, I just think, and you did mention this, as a really good observation is, it does seem like Aemond is kind of emerging as more of the leader amongst their siblings, right? Him claiming Vhagar and him kind of, you know, remarking about his duties to the realm by marrying his sister if he needed to, and perhaps maybe something going on with the time jump. So I'm kind of interested with how that's going to play out later on.
Yeah. I think for me, I'm interested to know how Mysera comes in again.
I hope she's still in it.
She's still in it. I think she's appearing again in the next episode. And I want to see how she's going to help Team Black. Because I don't know where her allegiance is, but I'm guessing it's with Daemon.
Yeah.
So I want to see where that goes. But I agree with you. I think Aemond is starting to get ahead of himself a little bit because in the preview, I saw a scene where he really beat the living shit out of his cousins. And I think the fact that claiming Vhagar kind of got to him, you know, he thinks that he's now, you know, unstoppable. Or he's omnipotent or something. Like he's the Targaryen, I guess. But I also cannot wait for Rhaenyra and Daemon's kid because that's also, apparently, they will have two kids and the kids will be called Aegon as well and Viserys. So confusing.
That's confusing.
Confusing. Yeah. So I want to see how that pans out, like how that complicates things.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
All right, Lon, any last words before we end this?
That's it for me.
All right. Y'all, I think it's a Filipino Heritage Month.
It is. Thank you for mentioning that.
Is there like a night market thing? I think there is. I could be wrong. The Bay Area, right? There's like maybe some food festival or something.
There might be. I haven't looked. I've just been so busy. But yeah, now that you mention it, there's probably something going on.
Yeah. But anyway, happy Filipino Heritage Month.
Thanks, Nadia.
My Filipino sisters and brothers. Other than that, be kind to one another. Tell TLC to put a trigger disclaimer. And
happy spooky season, everybody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Happy pumpkin spice season.
Pumpkin spice.
All right, y'all. Till next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening, WTFers. If you love the podcast, give us a 5-star review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. It is appreciated and really helps us out. You can also find us under listener support on anchor.fm and donate for as low as 99 cents or on Patreon at WTF Extra. You can engage with us on email, Twitter, and Instagram at 90 Day Fiancé WTF. We especially would like to hear what your WTF moments are each episode. We might even shout you out. Don't forget to like, share, and follow the podcast.